Okay, today we're going to talk about Balaam.
Oh, okay.
And, you guys know I'm usually known for really quick messages. Since we're eating today, I figured I'd do the full hour. Okay, so who was Balaam? Balaam was mentioned in 8 books of the Bible, 7 or 8. He was a non-Israeli. He lived in Pethor at the time the Israelites wandered in the wilderness near the end of Moses' life and the crossing of the Jordan River, which the Bible places around 1400 BCE. His existence is supported by extra-biblical evidence, such as the Deir Allah inscriptions, I'm sorry I did not look up what that was, dated to the late 9th to early 8th centuries BCE, which provides a contemporary account of Balaam, son of Beor. He was a prophet for hire. He was well known by the rulers in that area, so they would call on him to either curse their enemies or bless their own people. And it worked a lot. That's why he made a lot of money doing that. And then a definition of a prophet is somebody who's an inspired teacher or proclaimer of the will of God. Jeremiah is an example. He was a diviner. In the Bible, a diviner is a person who practices divination and attempt to gain hidden knowledge or predict the future by using supernatural means, often involving pagan rituals or spirits. He's also considered a sorcerer. In biblical context, a sorcerer is a person who practices magic, witchcraft, and divination, often through the use of supposed supernatural powers or evil spirits. And this is explicitly forbidden by God. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, how is he a prophet when he's doing all these other things? And that will be part of what we talk about.
Okay.
There's evidence that he was a banker, whatever that meant. But evidently he was a banker, loaned and money out to different people. He was definitely greedy. Most of the things he did involved him getting a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's a mercenary. Mercenary is somebody who's primarily concerned with making money at the expense of ethics.
Right.
Okay. So, Donald. Today we're going to be in mostly Numbers 22, if you want to go ahead and turn there. And Donald, could you read Numbers 22, 2 through 8 for me?
Now Balak, son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was terrified because there were so many people. Indeed, Moab was filled with dread because of the Israelites. The Moabites said to the elders of Midian, "This horde is going to lick up everything around us as an ox licks up the grass of the field." So Balak, son of Zippor, who was king of Moab at the time, sent messengers to summon Balaam, son of Beor, who was at Pethor, near the Euphrates River, in his native land. Balak said, "A people has come out of Egypt. They cover the face of the land and have settled next to me. Now come and put a curse on these people, because they too are powerful. They are too powerful for me. Perhaps then I will be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that whoever you bless is blessed, and whoever you curse is cursed." The elders of Moab and Midian left, taking with them the fee for divination. When they came to Balaam, they told him that what Balak had said. "Spend the night here," Balaam said to them, "and I will report back to you with the answer the Lord gives me." So the Moabite officials stayed with him.
Okay. And wanted to point out, Pethor, it says here, was a significant distance from Moab. Pethor was located at the site of Pithu on the Euphrates River in ancient Syria. I don't have a map or anything to show where all this is, but it would have been approximately 350 to 400 miles journey for Balaam in this story. So it took about 20 to 25 days. So he was very well and widely known. And Balak thought so much of him that he spent, you know, that much time to send off for him. So 20 to 25 days travel one way and then to come back. So he evidently was very well thought of as far as what Balak wanted him to do. And question for you, why do you think God would use such a man as Balaam? Because he was a prophet who did have a relationship with God. Mm-hmm. So why do you think God had a relationship with him?
I think God wants a relationship with all of us. Any who are willing to walk with him.
Mm-hmm. Something else I found was, you know, he's a prophet. He doesn't live anywhere. He's non-Israeli. And when a lot of times when we think of prophets in the Bible, we think of people that are of the Israeli nation. But evidently, it says here, one of those many prophets whom God had dispersed throughout the world since the dawn of history. So evidently there were a lot of people that were used as prophets that were not necessarily of the Israeli tribe that were all over the world. So it seems like God had relationships with a lot of these people, and many of them may not have even been in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Balaam is the only one I've heard of that he used in that way. Okay, Sydney, can you read for me? Numbers 2, 9 through 13.
22, right?
Yeah, 22, that's right. Yeah, typo there, sorry about that. Yeah.
What verse?
9 through 13 for me.
9 through 13, okay. All right, God came to Balaam and asked, "Who are these men with you?" Balaam said to God, "Balak, son of Zippor, king of Moab, sent me this message. A people that has come out of Egypt covers the face of the land. Now come and put a curse on them for me. Perhaps then I will be able to fight them and drive them away." But God said to Balaam, "Do not go with them. You must not put a curse on those people because they are blessed." The next morning, Balaam got up and said to Balak's officials, "Go back to your own country, for the Lord has refused to let me go with you."
Thank you. Amen. So one of the things that struck me is Balaam didn't know who the Israelites were. Because if he had, he probably would not have gone to God and said, you know, he would have told them right away, "Hey, look, this is God's people. You know, I'm not going to even entertain your thought," but you know, he was a prophet for hire. His motivation seemed to be, you know, monetary. And then I'm going to read 14 through 20. Okay, so the Moabite officials returned to Balak and said, "Balaam refused to come with us." Then Balak sent other officials, more numerous and more distinguished than the first. They came to Balaam and said, "This is what Balak, son of Zippor, says. Do not let anything keep you from coming to me, because I will reward you handsomely and do whatever you say. Now, come and put a curse on these people for me." But Balaam answered, "I already told you no. Why are you coming back again?" But he didn't. That's what he should have said, but he didn't. Said, "Even if Balak gave me all the silver and gold in his palace, I could not do anything great or small to go beyond the command of the Lord my God. Now, spend the night here so that I can find out what else the Lord will tell me." So, there again, God already told him no. But now he's like, maybe I can, can get God to change his mind. And there are examples in the Bible of God changing his mind.
Yeah.
But those people usually have a heart for God, and it doesn't seem like this guy really had a heart for God. He had a heart for himself.
Right.
So, and that night God came to Balaam and said, "Since these men have come to summon you, go with them, but do only what I tell you." God, you know, it doesn't say here, but God's probably going, "This idiot, I already told you no, and now you called me again." So, question. Why did God let Balaam go the second time?
After he refused to let him go the first time, why would God let him go the second time?
Free will.
Okay.
I think he also decided he would use Balaam for his own purposes, his own will. Balaam was pursuing his own selfish desires, in my opinion. But that's why he kept persevering with God as opposed to saying no, as you just said. But God, he really wanted to go, I think. And God was like, okay, but you're going to do what I want you to do, not what you want.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so Scott, can you do numbers 22, mm-hmm. 21 through 31, please?
21 and 31?
Yes.
Okay. Balaam got up in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the prince of Moab. But God was very angry when he went. And the angel of the Lord stood in the road to oppose him. Balaam was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in front of the road, with a drawn sword in his hand, she turned off the road into the field. Balaam beat her to get her back on the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the two vineyards, with the walls on both sides. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pressed close to the wall, crushing Balaam's foot against it, so he beat her again. Then the angel of the Lord moved on ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no room to turn either to the right or to the left. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam, and he was angry and beat her with his staff. Then the Lord opened the donkey's mouth, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you to make you beat me these three times?" Balaam answered the donkey, "You have made a fool of me. If I had a sword in my hand, I would kill you right now." The donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your own donkey, which you have always ridden to this day? Have I been in the habit of doing this to you?" "No," he said. Then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with his sword drawn. So he bowed low and fell face down. Sorry.
Thank you. Okay. Richard, could you continue with 32 through 35, please?
Yeah. The angel of the Lord asked him, "Why have you beaten your donkey these three times? I have come here to oppose you because your path is a reckless one before me. The donkey saw me and turned away from me these three times. If it had not turned away, I would have certainly killed you by now, but I would have spared it." Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned. I did not realize you were standing in the road to oppose me. Now if you are displeased, I will go back." The angel of the Lord said to Balaam, "Go with the men, but speak only what I tell you." So Balaam went with Balak's officials.
Okay. Thank you. So, there again, why was God mad at Balaam? He allowed him to go, but you know, he was almost to the point that he was going to kill him. So, why?
I don't think he was mad at Balaam. I think he showed him mercy. And he gave him, again, freedom of choice. Either recognize that you're going there because I'm allowing it or not. So I think he was that. He showed him mercy.
I think that it's reading this reminds me that later on, God gave Israel a king. Made him angry that they wanted a king, but he still did it. Mm-hmm. And he wants all of us who follow him to learn from our mistakes. He's trying to teach a lesson.
Right. Well, one thing.
I also think Balaam must have been thinking something, because God told him to go in verse 20, right?
Right.
And just do what I tell you. But along the way, he sent this angel, mm-hmm. and the donkey was his show of mercy, right, to keep him from getting killed. Mm-hmm. But the angel was going to kill him, he said. And I think it was because, this is just me speculating, Balaam had in his mind, he was probably thinking, I'm going to do what I want to do to get paid.
Right.
And so that I'm coming before this king, I can't disappoint him, he might kill me. I mean, he probably was thinking all these things, everything but I'm going to do what God told me to do.
Right.
And so God sent the angel.
Okay. Alicia?
I think this reminds me of the fact that free will is wonderful. Be able to make choices is wonderful. But there's a right choice and a wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we may decide, and God allows us to make the wrong choice, and he will care for us on the way, doesn't mean that doesn't like the choice. It doesn't mean that. I think I forget this at times. Just going my own way and letting God take care of me is not, it doesn't mean that my way is pleasing. And he didn't like his choice. Because the first thing that God said, and God doesn't change his mind, was don't go. That was the first thing he said to him. And that was the first choice he should have taken, and he didn't. He came back to God and didn't trust the first thing that God said. And because of that, God did not like that choice, but he used him anyway. And I just think that sometimes I forget that God is, he doesn't change his mind like that. He really did know what he wanted, and he didn't want him to go. But he used it anyway.
Right.
So that's challenging. Yeah.
I agree with that. And I also think that he went back to God because he was hoping to change God's mind and what God had said,
mm-hmm.
opposed to hearing what God wanted him to do, obeying what God wanted him to do, because he had a deep desire to go and do that for his own purposes.
Right.
So he went back to God to try to see if he could get God to change his mind.
Yeah.
And though he changed it and he rendered his decision, it was more like it was a permissive decision and not what he really wanted him to do.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah, one of the things that really stood out to me is in chapter 4, verse 34, I have sinned. I did not realize you were standing in the road to oppose me. So the first part, all that's true. Now, if you are displeased, I will go back. I mean, he's, exactly. Trying to manipulate God. Well, yeah, if you are displeased, and God's given him several opportunities here. Matter of fact, he gave him a couple of months in between these trips, the 25 days back and then back to him. So there was almost 2 months right there where he could have thought about, dodge the bullet. But then as soon as these more prestigious officials came, the more of them, he's probably getting a little puffed up in the chest and everything, like, wow, I must be really special.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I said all the silver and gold in this palace he couldn't do, he's like, yeah, right. He offered me all the gold and silver in his palace. That would be a great temptation to, I would dare say, anybody in this room. Money definitely can be a corrupter.
Mm-hmm. Sure can.
Yeah.
Okay, so where are we at? So numbers 23 and 24 are, we're not going to go into those in detail, but this is where Balak took Balaam to three different areas and tried to get him to curse three times. And there he is. He's still going along with Balaam. Is still going along with Balak. Now he's doing what God said. He's only saying what God tells him to say. But he's given himself opportunity after opportunity to be able to please Balak, so he can get paid. Instead of just doing the right thing, he said, "You know what? I'm out of here. I've been a fool. I'm going to go back home before I get in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know. And Numbers 24:9 sums this up perfectly. Like a lion, they crouch and lie down. Like a lioness, who dares to rouse them? This is the third blessing. May those who bless you be blessed, and those who curse you be cursed. Where have we heard that before?
With Abraham.
Exactly. Genesis 12:31. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. So that's two promises, the same promise made two times towards the Israelites. And as an aside, I think that's one of the reasons that America is so blessed, because we are Israel's biggest supporter in the world and have been forever, ever since the Jewish state came back in line in, 1947? 48. We've been their biggest supporter. And because of that, I believe we are where we are today as a country. But that's an aside. Okay, so let's see where. Now, in Numbers 31, 7 and 8, no need to turn there, but this is where the Israelites overcome all the local kings. It says, they fought against Midian as the Lord commanded and killed every man. Among their victims were Evi, Rechem, Zur, Hur, and Reba, the five kings of Midian. They also killed Balaam, son of Beor, with the sword. Now, why did they kill him?
He was still there with them.
And he was still there. There is a specific reason, though. Okay, let me share that reason. In 25, while Israel was staying, I've never been able to say this word, Shittim, the men began to indulge in sexual immorality with Moabite women, who invited them to the sacrifice to their gods. The people ate the sacrificial meal and bowed down before these gods. So Israel yoked themselves to the Baal of Peor, and the Lord's anger burned against them. The Lord said to Moses, take all the leaders of the people, kill them, and expose them in broad daylight before the Lord, so that the Lord's fierce anger may turn away from Israel. So Moses said to Israel's judges, each of you must put to death those of your people who have yoked themselves to the Baal of Peor. Then we've all read this story before. Then an Israelite man brought into a camp a Midianite woman right before the eyes of Moses and the whole assembly of Israel while they were weeping at the entrance to the tent of meeting. When Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw this, he left the assembly, took a spear in his hand, and followed the Israelite into the tent. He drove the spear into both of them, right through the Israelite man and into the woman's stomach. Then the plague against the Israelites was stopped, but those who died in the plague numbered 24,000. Now, you may be wondering, what has this got to do with Balaam?
Yes.
And we'll figure that out right now. Numbers 31:15-18. Have you allowed all the women to live, he asked them. They were the ones who followed Balaam's advice and enticed the Israelites to be unfaithful to the Lord in the Peor incident, so that a plague struck the Lord's people. Mm. And I won't read 17 because that's pretty harsh, but... So Balaam told the women of Moab, hey, go entice these guys. You know, get them to sin with you and start, sacrificing to your gods. That was the advice that Balaam gave them. I didn't go into all the reasons why he did it. I couldn't even find a reason. But that was the advice he gave. Remember, he was a transactional prophet. He had a transactional relationship with God. You know, he was not faithful to him in the least. He was faithful to whoever was going to pay him. So evidently, he didn't say it. Like I said, I couldn't find out why. But he gave this advice to hurt the Israelites. And because the Israelites fell into the trap of that, from that advice, 24,000 of them died before God was satiated.
Hmm.
So, what do we learn about the story of Balaam?
I think of being like a fair weather fan. You know, like it's not good to be a fair weather fan with your relationship with God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also, one thing I learned was be careful about who you're listening to. Like you know, he had a gift, okay? He had a gift, and it was given to him by God. Like, God could, he could curse or he could bless. That was a gift that was given to him. And instead of just focusing on God and that gift, that he also did dabbled over here in sorcery, he dabbled over here in divination. He was basically using whatever worked for him, and that is something that I think that I got from that, is be careful, first of all, how you use the gifts you're given. Like, if God's given me a gift to be able to understand things or see things or whatever, make sure that I'm only working with that gift from God and not just from, you know, the world or, you know. So that's something I definitely thought about.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I also thought about that passage, God will not be mocked.
Mm. Exactly.
And, you know, he will also not allow anything to be above him. And Balaam's selfish desires were obviously above God.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he did what God said on the one hand and then kind of undercut him on the other hand through this other transaction with the Midianite women. Mm-hmm. And God would not be mocked, so that's why he was destroyed.
Wow. Yeah.
Anybody else? Well, I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The guy I know, he's a father, he's not a master in his demeanor toward us. He obviously is our Lord, which is master, but he interacts with us as a father and a child. And one of the things that entails is that he knows that a certain action is going to hurt his people, is going to be bad for them, and it's going to be bad for their relationship with him, but he allows them to make that choice because they need to learn lessons. Mm-hmm. He does that for all of us. We need to learn lessons. When it's better to learn when God opposes us on the way.
Yeah.
But if we have to learn those lessons at the end, it's not as preferable, but that's what he'll do.
Definitely not. Definitely not preferable.
So I think about if Balaam had just gone ahead and gone, said what he needed to say, gave that little speech, you know, and ended it with, you know, those that are blessed will be blessed, those that are cursed will be cursed, and then went home. Because he did what he was supposed to do and went home. Everything probably would have been okay for him. I mean, he may have learned other lessons later on down the road. He might have gotten some more trouble. But it's obvious if he had interaction with the Midian women, he didn't just go home. It's kind of like when we get into something and we give somebody some advice, and, you know, we should be giving advice, and then we need to just step back, and that person needs to do what they need to do and make their own choice, and it's not for us to keep going. But if we stay there and we keep dabbling and pushing and talking, then we get ourselves into a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And Balaam got himself into a mess because he didn't know when to go back home.
That's very good. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me, you know, I'll be 24 next month, and in that 20, yeah, spiritually. Yeah, I look really old.
That was a given.
Yeah, well, she's over there thinking, no. I've got grandkids that old, but. No, it's just in 24 years, I have to admit there have been times when I've been transactional with God. especially in time of need. You know, might, you know, and judging by the thousand or so years of that we have in here as disciples, I'm probably not the only one. Yeah. It is very hard and very difficult, no matter how hard you try, to maintain that fervor for God the whole time. It's because we are human. We have ups and downs, and that can lead to a lot of transactional relations with God. So we need to really minimize that as much as possible, because we could come to look at God, if we do that too much, as you know, as a piggy bank of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that is definitely never good.
No.
Like, Rob's over there going, what are you talking about? That hasn't happened in the last week. Yeah, so definitely work on that. If we get to that point, you know, there's a lot of love and a lot of wisdom in this room that we can reach out to. Yeah. So never get to that point. And used to get, like, I think my wife was saying that, oh, by the way, thank you for memorizing the answer I gave you. I really appreciate that. You know, at least that's the one time I sounded intelligent. So I lost my train of thought there. But, yeah, okay. Let's move on to the next. I lost my train of thought, but make sure that we do not turn out to be like Balaam, or even get to that point. If we are, just reach out, pray a lot, you know, run into a brick wall, because then you'll have other stuff to worry about. We're going to do communion now.